Hey guys, welcome to episode 247 of the JV Club with my boy of summer, Richie Hirway. What a wonderful man. He is, of course, known for many things, but certainly for the brilliant podcast Song Exploder and the equally brilliant podcast West Wing Weekly that he does with Joshua Molina. And I was so delighted that he was delighted to do the JV Club. Very quickly before I get into the episode, I just wanted to also announce that this feels timely because this week SF Sketchfest just announced that we will be presenting West Wing Weekly as well as the Benson Movie Interruption on Saturday, August 26th in San Francisco. I'm going up for that and I can't wait. Doug Benson will be joined by surprise guests riffing 50 Shades Darker. Cannot wait to see that. And then Rishi and Josh will be joined by the creator of the West Wing, Mr. Aaron Sorkin. So please join us. I have to tell you that tickets are going really fast. So if you get this and you're going to be in the area and you want to come, please do. Someone is knocking on my trailer. I have to go shoot. But please enjoy this episode and I will talk to you next time.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Should we jump in right after we talk about feeling weird about something?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I feel weird about that. Hey, you want a podcast?
I'm ready.
Hooray!
Feeling weird is my default state. So.
Oh, good. Now, how are you feeling about your voice being on this? You're very comfortable with it on West Wing, but when we were...
I'm very uncomfortable with it on West Wing Weekly.
You are? Have you?
Yeah.
Because when we talked, we were talking about that in on Joko, and
yeah.
You were like, I didn't... My intention was not necessarily to be an on-mic podcaster.
It's true.
And now
I would prefer not to be.
That is very modest, and it makes all of those of us who just decided to jump in and yak about ourselves feel like real self-centereds.
I mean, there are certainly some people who have podcasts who probably, you know, maybe shouldn't. But I would say most of the people who are doing it because they're funny and charming are funny and charming, and they should.
Right. Well, thank you. I mean, I'm agreeing with you. Right. I guess that is true. That's funny you would say that because it is very true about us. No, but you have such a pleasant voice. And I think that that's the hardest thing for me is when I've brought it up more than once on this podcast is that feeling of tremendous guilt every time I'm annoyed with someone's podcasting voice because I'm sure there are people who can't stand mine.
Right.
But there is
And you can't control it.
I can't control it. There's a real... I can pretty much listen to any sort of, like, the sound of the voice, it doesn't ever really bother me. I'll listen to a nasal, whiny voice all day, but I think sort of cadence and upbringing somehow gets me down.
It even is though the personality.
It's not like I sound like a newscaster. I use like every other word.
Because I've heard you speak about, you know, podcasters whose voices are maybe not for you. I always assumed you meant the actual, like, sonic quality of their voice.
I think I have the problem I have is that, first of all, I probably don't like voices that unconsciously or consciously I worry I sound like. Maybe. I also worry a great deal about the idea of unconscious sexism in the way I perceive men's and women's voices.
Yeah.
The vocal fry thing is not a huge problem for me, but there is a... I think what I've discovered is that there is a dishy gossip approach, particularly when I'm listening to something that isn't that conversational. It's more political or like if it's a crime podcast, for example, that's where it gets me. Those are the ones I've had to stop listening to. Have you ever experienced that? Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yes. I mean, but like the personalities... I guess I think of that as personality thing. Yeah, less
because
about
if
the
I
sound
saw it on
voice.
Paper, if I saw the writing on paper, I don't know that it would trouble me. But I just was listening to someone who was like, when I first visited him in prison, I was really surprised at how handsome he was. Like, there's just this weird sort of casual gal, feels very young to me. And then I started thinking, oh no, I'm an old lady who, I don't know. What are your turnoffs in listening to podcasts?
Well, I think the thing that you said, not just in podcasts, in general, in life, that I feel all the time is, did you ever heard that thing that the thing we loathe most in others is what we fear most in ourselves?
Right. That's what right. I said, right? Yeah. I'm exactly. So worried that, yeah. that must be it.
Yeah.
So you do, what do you feel? So what does that look like for you? I should say look like is not accurate since we're talking about sounds.
I think it's less about the sound and more about the content.
Yeah.
I worry, you know, like I actually have a really hard time listening to the West Wing Weekly. We have farmed out as much of the listening, or I have farmed out as so much of the listening, so I don't have to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I understand.
It's too painful.
How did you decide to, I mean, is that, have you always sort of been into the presentation of art in a certain form, but from not necessarily on the stage with a light on you?
Well, I was the singer, you know, I was a singer in a band for a very long time, and that was like my main thing. But the difference is that like, every single note, every single word was meticulously figured out before I had to have to present it publicly.
Yeah.
And so I could feel like I lived with those decisions as opposed to trying to do it extemporaneously like this, where I feel like, well, am I saying the wrong thing? Am I stammering? Am I pausing? And
yeah.
Did I missay what I meant? You know?
Is it is there a chicken or the egg thing where, because of your experience doing that and becoming comfortable with performance in that way, did that then make you uncomfortable after the fact? Or do you think that the reason that you pursued that was because you always were like that and it was this nice formula that sort of felt more comfortable than?
Yeah, I think it's the latter. I feel most at ease when I get to over prepare and like overthink things.
Yeah.
And then eventually be like, well, now I just have to let it go. But I've looked at it from every single angle and tried it six different ways. And
yeah, that does seem very scientific. Mm-hmm. Does that, what do you, so that you sort of give yourself permission? Like I know that I sort of did my process regardless of what the end result is in a way that feels like you don't have the control over it that you.
Yeah. At a certain point you've gone blind and you're like, I can't see it anymore. I think this is the best version, but now I don't know, so now I just have to let it go.
Yeah, because I think that's a different kind of person than I grew up as. Mm-hmm. Like I sort of just wanted to do it once, and I would hate it more as I went. Not to say that I love the first version either,
right?
But I think I was so self-critical that, you know, like with writer friends of mine who can, you know, you start othering people like, oh, that person can do seven drafts of something and still kind of like the end result. Well, it turns out often that's not true.
Right, right.
But you think, well, that must be what they do, because I know if I write something, I hate it if I try to make it better,
yeah.
So to speak.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I think it's, for me, there's a long held perfectionism that I've been trying to get rid of, but for a long time, for most of my life, I believed that there is like a perfect version of things, and I kind of even liked that about myself, because I think there's something romantic about it, but there's also something like really toxic about that viewpoint, that there's some perfection that you have to achieve, and if you haven't hit that, then everything short of that is a failure,
right? Oh, we talked about that on the podcasting panel a little bit, I think, on mm-hmm. Joko. Yeah.
Yeah. The difference between something being perfect and something being good.
Because we were all saying sort of like, just get it out there. Just do a version that it may not end up being. And, you know, don't be afraid to. But then the alternate conversation of that, I mean, the sort of alternate viewpoint of that is, well, also people might not like it and give it a chance right. if it's just garbage from the beginning. So I guess there is a combination. Do you have a sense of where that comes from? I know that's very sort of armchair psychologist, but a sense of where the idea that there was a perfect version of something came from?
I think at least 80% of it has got to just be innate in me. Because I don't think, I have an older sister and I don't think that she feels the same way. Mm. And then maybe 20% of the last 20% of it might come from my parents.
Mm-hmm. Where'd you guys grow up?
It might just be the way I interpreted what my parents said. It could be 100%.
Sure.
Just me and hearing, you know. my parents would say things like, you know, I'd come home from school and I'd be like, oh, I got an A- on this thing. And my dad would be like, next time get try for the A. And or at least that was what he meant, and he meant it in like a kind of like a positive supportive way. Uh-huh. But I heard it like, this is not good enough.
Sure.
And I'd be like, oh, it's not good enough, it's never good enough. But you know, and part of it also, I realized this language barrier. You know, my dad would try, he'd be like, that's not how I meant it to come out.
Oh, sure. So yeah, so tell us a little about where you grew up and where your parents are from and all that kind of stuff. Sure, put it in context, I guess.
I grew up in Peabody, Massachusetts, which is North Shore, Massachusetts. It's like north of Boston.
Now, is that Peabody? Like someone else would say
Peabody. Somebody else would say Peabody. And, yeah, okay. But it's Peabody.
Peabody. Peabody is so much cuter. Peabody.
I'm glad that you find it endearing. Most people,
I think,
like,
it's adorable. Peabody.
It's more fun to say Peabody than Peabody.
Way more fun.
Yeah. But my parents are from India. My dad came over in 68. And then he went back, had an arranged marriage with my mom. She came over in 1970.
Mm-hmm.
And they'd lived in Massachusetts basically my whole life. My dad was a grad student at UMass at the time when he met my mom. And then they moved into an apartment in Massachusetts, and then eventually moved, like, you know, 15, 20 minutes north to the house where I grew up.
Mm-hmm. Where do I start with this? First of all, this is probably a boring way of putting it, but I'm always interested in when you have something like an arranged marriage, which is so out of step with American culture. But then, and so you have a person who has been living in this culture, but still embraces that, makes that choice, but then brings that choice, like your mom's a choice, but you know what I'm saying? Brings that cultural choice back to the United States. And, I find that so fascinating. And part of it is because I've been such, you know, my family are such a bunch of white mutts from various places like Ireland and Scotland and France and all that. But, so I feel like, you know, everybody's sort of been a part of this, whatever this kind of more pervasive American culture as it's evolved is, as ultimately has not involved arranged marriage in the same way that it would in India. And so that's, of course, that's going to be interesting to me, right? But just that idea of, it's one thing when you're doing it and you're sort of surrounded by people who also embrace that and support it, versus pulling out of that and dropping into some place where I'm sure they did have friends who were like, arranged marriage, do tell.
Yeah. I mean, my sister and I were also fascinated by it. I think because we grew up here, it did feel foreign, even though it was our parents and it was a part of their life and therefore part of our lives. It felt unimaginable. So we would ask them about it a lot. I always got a kick out of the idea that, like, marriages that were not arranged had their own special category in India. Like, it was like, oh, well, you know, your mom's not her next younger sister, but the sister after that, the baby sister in the family, she had a love marriage. So they'd call it a love marriage.
That's so great.
Yeah.
It's like in this version. So I was just with people who were playing disc golf this weekend, who said that some people who play disc golf enough call regular golf ball golf. You're like, okay, well, that's just the scope.
Yeah,
I get it. That's your scope of what's normal versus. Yeah, I love that's sort of salacious, maybe, or, you know, certainly different enough, and it's a little scandalous. Yeah. But it obviously worked for your parents. It did. I assume it works for your parents.
They're totally dedicated to each other. And I think that's also part of the reason why it didn't feel like that big of a thing too. You know, Mike, I didn't have any friends whose parents were divorced until maybe 11, 12, or 13, certainly, like, growing up, everybody, you know, the small town where I was, all those parents were together.
Oh, Peabody?
In Peabody, yeah.
Feels great. Feels great.
And so everything just kind of felt like the same. And like, the dynamic between my friends' parents, the dynamics between them didn't seem any different. It's just like, okay, because mostly you interact with them as parents.
Yeah.
And the moms, you know, the momishness of the moms and the daddishness of the dads was universal. Or universal enough that I just felt like, all right, yeah, everything seems normal.
Yeah.
It was only later that I started to really, you know, understand how weird it must be to just be like, okay, well, you guys, you want to get married? And also with my parents, it wasn't like, It wasn't like they never met until, you know, the
wedding day.
Well,
that's the next question. Yeah. This is sort of what is their, or their, what is their relationship origin story as it gets told time and again? Because I'm sure that's another thing, is they sort of have, they have their version of you being the front of a band, right? Which is like, they've probably told that story enough now that it is like, this is the song that we sing. Right. It, there's no music behind it, but this is the song that we always sing when people ask about this.
Yeah. It's pretty funny. It might, my dad went to go visit my mom, you know, when he was there, they had been connected by letter, like over correspondence, their family, the families had been connected by mutual friends.
And how early was the marriage arranged? Cause that's the other thing, is that I think a lot of us have the sort of fairy tale experience of like, and from when they were born, destined to be together.
not that early. Like, I think my dad, you know, like my dad went home from graduate school and was like, oh, it's time for him to get married. Mm-hmm. And so he went home to get married without knowing who he was going to marry.
Wow.
And then, you know, my mom at the time was just like meeting a bunch of potential husbands. I think my dad was supposed to go around meeting a bunch of potential wives, but I don't know that he actually did. I've never heard from my dad's side about any other women. So maybe it was just my mom.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
But my mom told me, you know, like she wasn't super into it.
Uh-huh.
into the whole like process of like having to meet guys. I think she wanted to be swept off her feet a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And that the potential for that was pretty low.
Does it feel, is there a sense of, and I say this again, in a country that prides itself in being perhaps more feminist than it in fact is or was, but, and obviously that's sort of a loaded word now for some people. But is when you're talking about something like arranged marriage in a more traditional Indian culture, is there a sense of sort of the guy and the girl are sort of thrown into it at the same level together? Or is there a sense of kind of slightly in favor of the gentleman or slightly more matriarchal? Because to me, it sounds like it's really just like you're both, this is what you're both having to kind of experience and be afraid of, but be excited about at the same time. Yeah. Because if your mom is, if you're saying that your mom sort of stood out in the way of, you know, she wasn't necessarily the meekest person.
No, definitely not.
I would say that if anything, many American women elicit lots of eye rolls for being so clear about what they want and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's why I think. Back to the question that you had asked about where that sense of perfectionism comes from. My mom always has, like, you know, she's always got an opinion.
Yeah.
About like whatever you're wearing or whatever.
And oh, she does. Yeah.
She'll say it for sure.
Does she have that, first of all, I feel like this is just a parent podcast where I'm like, want you to tell me their stories.
Yeah.
Give me all their business. but was she the kind of mom who sort of had, like she really had a sense of you reflecting her on some level, or was it more just that she was just invested and, you know, passionate about her kids?
My mom has kind of like a Jane Austen character.
I love it. What a wonderful description.
I think that she feels like there's a right way to do things and then a way that is not, that's not acceptable, mm-hmm. you know, in polite society, in polite company.
Mm-hmm.
And part of that is based on like, assumed judgment from others, and part of it is based on your own judgment of others. but yeah, I think that she just felt like, you know, that's the right way to, you know, that's the right way to do things, whether or not she was actually right or not.
Yeah. How does that fit in with what you found yourself fancying as a younger person? Like by the time you were a teenager, did you have strong opinions about what you were excited about and what you weren't? And did they jive with what your parents wanted for you?
I had strong opinions about everything.
Wonderful.
And by the time I was a teenager, they definitely didn't jive with my parents. Religion was a thing that was a big point of conflict between us.
You being a born again Baptist.
Yes. And them being Methodists.
Uh-huh. Predictable. Like, predictable.
Cats and dogs.
Yeah.
No, I remember, I think I finally won when my parents would go to temple. the Hindu temple that was about like 45 minutes away from our house. And they would go, not every Sunday or anything like that, but they would go, you know, especially on holidays and significant moments. And they would try and get me to come with them. And, you know, at a certain point when I was a teenager, I told them, I was like, I don't believe in this stuff. And so I don't think that I should go. It doesn't make sense to me. And I was like, and even if I did, you know, like, why would you go? Why do you go to a place, for a particular kind of piety or like communion with God? Because if God exists, then God is everywhere. And there's no place that has more, whatever.
Yeah.
You know, stuff like this, I would get into.
I feel that's a wonderful example of how we often feel as teenagers versus how we feel as adults.
Yeah. And so, so that was, you know, my argument. And then my mom finally one time was like, just go for me.
Yeah.
And I was like, I'll go for you next time. If this time you don't go for me.
Oh, Rishi.
How'd
that go?
Then she was like, yeah, all right, you stay, I'll go. That was it. That was basically.
That's a good way. That's a very immediate way of communicating. Like, how is it going to feel to you to not go? Oh, really? Well, that's how it feels to me to go.
Yeah.
That's very like, clever.
I will respect your beliefs in this one dose if you do it. Just one time. Just trade off.
Are they still, grabbing a chair. Mm-hmm. Are they still, this is unprecedented. Stop the presses. It's unprecedented. I am pulling a chair. I don't even know how to pull my office chair over here because I never sit in an office chair.
Do you normally sit on the floor?
Always sit on the floor. This is the first time in my home. The first time I have ever sat in this chair. And it is because I have a pinched nerve in my, kind of my shoulder blade area that radiates up to my neck that, I activated on a hike with the dogs last week where we were going down kind of a slippery slope and I slipped on some loose gravel and fell.
Would you rather sit on the couch?
No, this is actually great. I forgot that when I was sitting like this last week, I felt worse afterwards. And I thought to myself, like, maybe I shouldn't do that next time. I don't know how to do this. Now I'm above you, which all feels very weird. Now it feels like I'm like looking down on you.
I'm at your house. You are the voice of authority.
I'm in my throne.
Yeah.
What were we saying? Okay. So since then, do your parents still go to church as regularly? I say church, but do they go to temple?
Temple.
The reason I said church is because in my mind, I was thinking of my example, which is I also said, I'm not doing this anymore. This is not for me. And only when I probably 6 years ago, for the first time since I was a teenager, I went to church with my mom for her.
Right.
And it wasn't something she asked me to do.
Right.
It was a total shift in my thinking where for some reason, all of a sudden, like 6 years ago, I was like, I bet she'd like if I went to church with her while I was visiting.
Yeah.
And it felt so easy. It felt like, oh, I can just do this. I don't have to do it every Sunday. Right. I don't even live here. She can just show me off to her church mates.
It doesn't have to mean something about your identity.
Yeah. So did you have anything like that? Were you?
I definitely chilled out more about everything as I got older. But now I live so far away from them. I don't see them that often and it just doesn't really come up that much. And frankly, they don't go to temple as much because my mom's health has deteriorated a lot in the last few years. Mm. It's actually really thinking about her, like the way she was when I was a kid is so different from how she is now because she basically can't get around on her own and she can't really speak very well. Mm-hmm. She has like a degenerative nerve kind of disorder that they don't know what it is exactly, but it's kind of like Parkinson's. And so her voice is really quiet. Mm-hmm. And she used to be this kind of like stentorian presence in our house. And she's like the kind of the joker and the storyteller of her siblings. And so she's kind of been reduced in a lot of ways physically and also vocally. So it's like I kind of have a different person in that position now.
I really can relate to that. And not my mom doesn't have that, but I don't really talk about my mom's current state very often, but she's also very different than she was.
Yeah.
And there's, yeah, I just can really relate to that. There's a lot of, I'm still in the phase in her where she is with her health where I'm just grasping for those moments where it feels like the person that I associate her with.
Yeah.
I'm just grasping for that. I get those nuggets and I hoard them like a squirrel for winter. Like, oh, I have a voicemail from her. Oh, it's a great voicemail. I'm saving this. This is precious, you know, becomes this treasure.
Yeah.
So I really can relate.
Yeah.
That's so strange to when that happens with our folks. It feels like, but people say that's natural. You know, in a way that, of course, it's natural in a way that losing your child isn't natural.
Right.
But not unlike women that I've talked to who have experienced pregnancy, it's amazing how unnatural the most natural things, the most physiologically natural things for us as a species have become by far the most unnatural feeling, right?
Yeah.
You know, death, illness, birth, anything, just all of those things that are big. I feel like I've spoken to few people who, when they lose one of their parents, are like, yeah, I mean, it just felt like the most natural thing in the world.
Yeah,
I knew she was going to die at school. I really felt okay with it. Like, we're very changed by that. And certainly when our parents begin to transform or metamorphose and go through a metamorphosis of sorts, albeit not necessarily for the best, it's just a real interesting process.
Yeah.
And it's very tough.
It's interesting that, like, how much your physical self determines your personality.
Yes.
Like the thing, is it the sound of their voice or is it the person behind the voice? But she has changed as a person, you know, like insofar as what your personality is determined by how it's perceived by other people.
Mm-hmm.
So the way that she interacts with people is totally different. She's just, you know, normally she would pipe up and tell jokes and stuff, and now she doesn't do that. And so I think people who have met her in the last, you know, 5 or 6 years think of her as a very different person than how I see her, how I remember her.
Of course. Of course. Wow. Yeah. I don't even know where to segue from that. There's no like fun segue. Like, anyway, how'd you feel about muscle cars? But I really can relate. Boy, can I relate. So you knew that you didn't want to go to church.
Yeah.
I'm leaning into that so hard. So you didn't want to go to Methodist church.
Right.
What is Hindu temple like? I have some friends who are Hindu, but they don't ever observe on mass.
Yeah. We don't do mass.
I'm sorry. I should. En masse, as a group.
My main interaction with temple when I was a kid is the food, you know, like,
she perks up.
Yeah. It's like you do your obligatory stuff and you don't really like understand. You're just kind of going through the paces following like my dad says, okay, now go do this thing. Now do this.
Right.
And
right.
Like, all right, whatever. And the whole time I'm just thinking about in the basement, there is like food that's being cooked that I am excited to have. And that was the thing.
That's a bigger incentive and a thing to look forward to associated with that activity than most of us have. Cause I was not looking forward to the torn up white Wonder Bread and water that comes in the sacrament.
Yeah.
Oh, that's what I was going to ask you about your dad being a food scientist.
Uh-huh.
Does him being a food scientist have the same, like, is there a sense of him eating the way a chef enjoys someone else's food? Like, is he, I know that he's not a chef and you know, made that clear, but is there kind of a sense of his experience of eating a nice meal? Do you think it might be similar to somebody who really thinks about that in a chef-y way?
The thing that I think about when it comes to that stuff with my dad is, he's always interested in like new products because really his stuff is, it's less, I mean, it's funny. He's a food scientist and so much of what he makes, I won't eat, you know? And I'm like, what's so processed? And you know, here in Los Angeles, like, Dad, do they have it at Whole Foods or Trader Joe's?
No? Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
But I really appreciate this where he, and this is like a shorthand that we just use for my dad all the time where, he'll like have some weird flavor of potato chip in the house.
Uh-huh.
You know, and I'm like, what's this? Why did you do this? And my dad will be like, something different. And that is like his response for so many, uh-huh. those choices, you know, or like a new restaurant. I mean, he will be like, he wants to try new things. Mm-hmm. And one time I asked him about that. I was like, Dad, why is this like something different, like always so appealing to you? And he was like, well, you know, something different is something new and possibly exciting, and you might discover you like it. And he was like, also, my job relies on the part of people being willing to try something different.
Oh, okay.
Because he's, you know,
he's walking the walk, not just talking the talk.
Exactly. They're in product development. That's what they do, is they develop new recipes or new formulations for things. And so if people didn't have that instinct, because I was saying, I was like, I find the thing that I like and then I just stick with it.
Yeah.
And he was like, yeah, but if everybody did that, there would never be any new products. And he's like, and how did you find those first things? You know, that's my dad's
model. Fair enough.
And so now, me and some of my friends and my wife, we like just have this shorthand of just like something different.
Maybe I'll try to adopt more of that, but it might not be in trying the new flavor of chips.
Yeah.
It does work for that. Yeah. Once you start,
it really does. But it's like, oh, there's a spicy Thai kettle chip.
Yeah.
Let's try that.
I'll tell you what I had to do the last time I did at midnight. I had to do a Facebook Live tie-in right afterwards. And the thing that they had us do was try to identify which chips were what they had. Like, so this is very funny that you would use that as an example, because there were like 12 different types of potato chips and then cards of what each one, you know, which is cards of what was in there in the mix.
Right.
And I took to that big time.
Yeah.
Did not want to take any of them home. Did not want to eat more than like half a chip.
Right.
But the challenge of identifying flavors and kind of trying to okay, well, do I think it's going to look different? What am I expecting?
Yeah.
All of that I took on like I was in sixth grade science.
That sounds
so fun. I wrote into it hard. Same with when you go to science. You know, like a vineyard, and you can sort of smell.
Oh,
sometimes the really sciencey ones will let you sort of smell. Then you have to identify, like, oh, what is this? Because there's a blueberry field nearby, that's where you'll get hints of, you know, when you get to be in that involved in the process. Did you like science when you were in high school?
That's when I decided I didn't like science.
Okay,
I thought that I liked science.
No religion, no science.
Yep. I mean, I like it as an idea. Uh-huh. I just knew that I wasn't good at it. I was thinking about the episode that you did with Kristen Bell,
mm-hmm.
when you guys were talking about how you would just abandon things that you weren't immediately good at.
You relate to that?
Related that to, yeah.
What did you naturally take to and be
good at? Well, so I thought that I was like a math and science kid because it's just, you know, you're kind of pushed in that direction anyway, being an Indian boy. Like, they're like, this is what you'd be good at, you know?
And that's from the school, not from your parents or both?
No, I think from my parents. Okay. I think from everybody, really.
Yeah.
There's, you know, there's something like more masculine about that. And I think also because there's like, it's easier to be quantifiably good at it. You know, it's like, oh, I got, getting 100 on a math test is easier to understand than
that's
like
very interesting
a on an English
that's very interesting
like that.
Yeah,
so I don't know, I guess I just thought that, and I thought like I don't really know exactly where it came from. You know, I loved Legos. Mm-hmm. I loved like building things, and so I felt like I had this kind of analytical part of my brain, and so in eighth grade, I was in public school all my life, and then in ninth grade, I went to boarding school.
Oh, okay. Where was your boarding school?
It was in New Hampshire.
Okay.
Phillips Exeter Academy in Exeter, New Hampshire, and that was where things really changed because I think up until that point, I didn't think of myself as like I'm a math and science nerd and that's it. I thought I was like good at school.
Yeah.
But and then you know you get to high school and it kind of feels like you're starting to figure out your track. Or something, and I thought that would be, you know, I was like maybe I'd be an architect or some kind of artsy engineer or something like that.
Yeah.
I don't know, but then I really realized that that wasn't really my strength, and I didn't really care about it, and I liked the humanities a lot more.
Was part of that? Do you think being kind of plucked up and removed and dropped in away from your parents, away from any other close, intimate influence kind of telling you what they thought you were good at?
Yeah,
or?
Definitely.
Yeah.
And also being around kids who are so hardcore and so smart, like so much more advanced than I was in everything. And again, especially like with the math science stuff, you know, with English classes in at my high school, everybody's taking the same, you know, you have different teachers, but you're all advancing at the same level. Mm-hmm. Everybody kind of starts in the same place. But with math, you would test into whatever level you were at. Mm. And so I had tested into like the last part of the first year. You know, the beginning of my first year of math, I jumped to the end of the first year. And I was like, okay, I felt like good about that. But there were kids, excuse me.
Well, how does that work? Wait,
so it's like,
so how did you pick it up almost end of stream?
Because they just start, they'll the class,
they'll just start you where?
Yeah, they'll start you wherever.
So it would be like, we're starting you here, even though this for a standard school would be the end of
this exactly,
process.
Yeah, yeah, it was okay. Like, there would be, you know, this is so boring, but it was math, 110, 120, 130, and okay. I started in 130.
Okay.
You know? But then there were, but like my roommate started in 210. And then there was, and then the 300 level was calculus. And then like, and you could, so you could do 310. And then if you did 319, that meant like the AP version. Mm-hmm. So there was another kid who lived next door to me who was also a freshman, and he started in the AP calculus class as a freshman. Mm-hmm. And I was like, like, in 2 years, I'm going to get there.
Yeah.
And he was already, and so I was like, God, I'm not.
Immediately way against other people. Immediately, yeah. Immediately, like, nope, yep, oh, okay, I'm. This
yeah.
isn't me.
Yeah,
I would have like, done the I'm exact
not,
same thing.
I'm not good at.
I would have done the exact same thing.
But it was so it was a little bit easier harder to decide who was good at English or something like sure. that. And then I had one teacher in junior year who really loved my writing, and I had not thought of myself as being somebody who had any kind of aptitude in that, you know, like I guess I liked it or whatever, but he was the kind of teacher. He was one of those teachers, you know,
oh, captain, my captain.
Yeah. And, he made me feel like I was a good writer and that activity and that like attention, it was really exciting for me. And there, at the same time, I was also taking philosophy classes for the first time. Mm-hmm. And I really liked that part. And I liked the debate of it, sitting around the table and arguing about it. And that was when I realized that, like, I think I wanted to have this totally different path. And there were a couple of teachers who I really loved, who had gone to Yale mm-hmm. for both undergrad and graduate school, and they had also gone to the high school that I was at. They'd gone.
Yeah, I was going to ask you if it was one of those boarding schools that had this sort of like, well, these are the three colleges that people tend to go to from here, or if it was, if you know, if there's a track that you kind of look out in the front of you and see, or if it really is just completely varied and all kinds of different outcomes.
People had all kinds of different outcomes by the time I was there. Earlier, you know, it was like people went to Ivy League schools and that was it.
Right.
But when I was there, it was like anybody could go anywhere.
Right. But these teachers that you had this very specific experience.
They had gone to Exeter. They had gone to Yale for undergrad. And then they went to Yale for master's. And then they ended up at Exeter again teaching. And I thought that was the path that I wanted to take. Mm-hmm. So by the time I was done with school, that was my plan. Was I was gonna leave. I was going to go to Yale and do the same thing. Do English and philosophy and come back and teach.
And come
English
back and be a teacher.
Or philosophy. Yeah.
Something I love... Oh. I just love that when you see that, I mean, I've seen it a little bit with like, I had Stephanie Courtney on the podcast and she was telling me that she worshiped her older sisters. And so she just kind of was just doing the things that her older sisters did. And,
yeah.
And hearing that when you get so excited by a very specific someone, especially a teacher, and that is the kind of, like, you feel like your world cracks open, but it actually kind of only cracks open to this like tiny slit where yeah. then that's the like exactly. course. Like, well, I'll just be exactly like this person.
Yeah.
It's so adorable, not in a condescending way, but it's just, oh, I just love that. I yeah. love that. It's like, well, I love this person. So I guess I that's gotta be the answer, right?
Yeah.
I totally get it.
Yeah.
I really get it.
Idolized this one English teacher, and he was married to, he was the head of the English department, and then he was married to the head of the math department. And I remember for like a Valentine's Day assembly, because three times a week we would have assembly where the whole school would gather in for Valentine's.
This is not a co-ed school, I assume.
It was a co-ed school.
It is a co-ed school. Okay, good. Yeah. I was assuming that it was not.
Yes.
I should never have said, oh, captain, my captain, because I also was assuming it was in like the late 50s.
It was.
Okay.
But co-ed.
Great.
There was a Valentine's Day assembly, and he read a poem that he had written for his wife.
Oh, give me a break. I love it.
And just slayed. Oh. Everybody was like losing it there. It was so, and she's there, you know, just having to be the object of his affection.
Yeah.
And he's beaming and she's beaming. And I was like, this guy is the man.
Yeah. Only if he had not yet married her and that was his proposal to her, yeah, would it have been exactly. Like a step further.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. So so what was the social scene like? A boarding school that's co-ed when you're in high school seems like it could be a real hanky-panky situation.
I mean, I was very excited to go there.
Yeah.
because the options that I had. So my sister went to college before I got to high school. Mm-hmm. And she got there and my sister had a lot of health issues. Mm-hmm. And so when she graduated in the top 10 of her class, but she had missed 80 out of 180 days of school.
Ooh.
Still managed to graduate in the top 10 of her class.
What a badass.
Yeah. And so we're like, total badass. Then she got to college. She went to Emory for college and she called my parents immediately. And she was like, I'm so unprepared for this. She's like, high school did not set me up for this level of academic rigor. And yeah, whatever you do, don't let Rishi go to the public school. Mm-hmm. Don't let him go to the same Peabody High that I went to.
Yeah.
Because he's going to have trouble.
Hmm.
And so then we started the process of me like looking at other options.
Yeah.
It's tough. Like, you know, then it was a matter of like, where would I get in and what would the financial aid situation be?
Mm-hmm.
And so there was one school that was like close to home, but it was like an all boys Catholic school. A bunch of my friends were going to go there. It wasn't very, very expensive. But then Exeter, was like, you know, I'd have to board there. It was like further away. But they gave me a full ride. And so, and I was like, oh, thank God.
That is awesome. To get a full ride. I mean, that would be, it seems like that would be a really, because if your parents were maybe unsure about losing you all together to the boarding school.
Yeah.
What, did you date when you were in high school then?
I did. And that's when everything changed. All this stuff happened kind of at the same time.
Yeah.
You know, like my teacher who was like, you should be a writer. Which I'm obviously not, but just that moment was, this was all kind of around the time, like sort of the spring, right around the time when I turned 16, I went on my first date, had my first kiss, had my first girlfriend, had this teacher, and started like, I don't know, things like kind of started looking up for me in a way that, I mean, I really liked my high school before then, but it was challenging and didn't feel magical. Mm-hmm. And then at that point I was like, is, you know, like when you're a senior and you're like, yeah, I got this.
Yeah.
I was starting to approach that feeling.
Yeah.
And started to feel like, okay, I've figured this thing out a little bit.
Yeah. Did you, this is going to sound dumb, but did you guys have like TVs in your boarding houses? And did you, you know, cause some places really are just, you know, there's nothing like that. You go into the town if you're going to watch a movie, but there's, you know, or maybe there's a common room or something like that.
There was a common room.
Oh, okay.
There was a common room and there was a TV in there and that was it. And there was a phone in there and that was it.
So did you feel like you were getting exposed to contemporary culture in terms of music and movies and TV the way somebody who would be living at home would be, or, like, did you have stuff that you were really into? Like, oh, I got to watch such and such. Or, well, I know I love this director's movies, you know.
Well, that for sure. We started to, you know, that was around the time when, like, Quentin Tarantino was putting out Reservoir Dogs and Pulp Fiction and stuff. And so there was, like, a kind of little mini teenage cinephile community in my dorm.
Great.
And so we loved that. And, you know, like, I was starting to get into independent film around then. But you know, like we couldn't watch really any TV. The only TV I think that there were some kids who were older than me who would tape X-Files, and then we could only watch TV from. The TV had to go off at 8 o'clock mm-hmm. every night, mm. except on Saturday we could keep it. We could have it on.
Yeah, 8 o'clock is when everything comes on.
Yeah,
that's funny.
So we could like record something mm-hmm. and then watch it. You know, on Saturdays. Mm-hmm. So on Saturdays they'd watch X-Files.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't really watch it that much.
Yeah. And were you into sports or anything? Was there anything like that going on?
I ran track and then switched from that to I started playing Ultimate Frisbee.
Okay.
Which was not.
What's the difference between what's Ultimate Frisbee? I only just, I mean, literally this last weekend did I become acquainted with what Frisbee golf / disc golf even was.
Ultimate Frisbee is sort of like, it's kind of along the lines of soccer, football, and rugby, in that there's like two end zones and you have to get, and you.
I'm sure I've been told this before, but it just didn't. Yeah. It didn't lock in.
It's. That's a pretty simple game. You'd have to throw the frisbee, you know, into the and have it be caught in the other end zone, mm-hmm. and you can't run with the frisbee. Mm-hmm. That's basically it.
Okay. So there's not the same kind of violent tackling that takes place in rugby, or is there?
I mean, you can't make contact. Like once some, you know, there's a lot of jostling to catch the frisbee and stuff, but since you can't run with it, there's a lot of tackling.
Okay. Yeah.
But it was really fun.
That kind of thing is, I mean, if those things that you compared it to, rugby and so forth, and soccer particularly, I played soccer when I was in junior high, but when you're that young, you really don't even have an awareness of how exhausting it is. I mean, yeah. I think there's just this sort of, I just don't remember ever being that tired. I knew I hated running long distances in any sort of PE environment, but when it was a sport like that, I just feel like you're this kid. So you have this like boundless energy.
Yeah.
And as an adult, I went and watched a friend of mine play in, you know, like an intramural, like whatever, soccer, just like a fun adult soccer team.
Yeah.
And I was so exhausted just watching. I was like, oh, this is all running. You're just running. You're just running all the time. Mm-hmm. For a great long distance as fast as you can. It just seemed so overwhelming to me.
That was the other thing that happened, similar to the math stuff, you know. So I skipped a grade when I was little, and so I was always the youngest person in
me too.
My grade. Oh yeah,
yeah.
So maybe you can.
I mean,
relate
I skipped
this.
Kindergarten. I didn't even really.
Same with me.
Yeah,
yeah. So
feels like I want to be like, I skipped seventh grade, yo. Right. Like I was that smart. They were just like, nah, you got all that in your head already.
Yeah.
Kindergarten, not so much.
But it counts, you know. I mean, like, so this is the thing.
I'll say this. To be a smart kid and be the youngest, like to still be smart in the grade that you aren't supposed to be in yet, that's all right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, and everything was fine up until I got to middle school, because I was like okay at sports. I was even maybe pretty good at sports. And certainly like I liked them and I remember around like fourth grade or something, I started to realize that I was fast. And I was one of the fastest kids in school. And so that was just something that I felt like I knew about myself. And then I remember, getting to sixth grade, the school was suddenly much bigger. You know, I went from this school of 50 people to a school of, or, you know, 50 people per grade to a school of 400 people per grade.
Yeah.
And there were some kids who had been held back and stuff. And, you know, and we'd have to go and we had to run a mile for whatever. And I ran it and I was like, okay. And you know, I came in like 30th or something like that. Nothing special at all.
Right.
30th out of 400 is still like, okay, but nothing special. And I was like, all right, I guess I'm just not that fast. And then then the revelation came in seventh grade. We did it again. You know, you have to run it every year. And again, I think I was like in somewhere between 30 and 35th or something. And I had my time, but they post the times for everybody. Mm-hmm. And I remember looking in the gym and seeing the sixth grade times, and the number one kid in sixth grade had a slower time than I did. And I realized that if I hadn't skipped a grade.
There you go. You'd been the fastest.
I would have been the fastest kid in the school.
In your grade. Ugh.
And, or in the grade. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it suddenly dawned on me like the consequences of my parents deciding to like push me ahead.
Yeah.
And I was so sad.
They ruined your life. Let's face it, they ruined your life.
I mean, they made me...
From then till now.
They turned me from a jock into a nerd. I went from being a jock to a potential jock.
They just flipped the switch.
Yeah, because I was small scrawny and like, I started to think about all the ways in which that affects you, you know, like with girls, I think about that a lot too. Like if you're a year younger than everybody else and like it shows in the way you look.
Yeah.
A little bit harder, and
yeah,
I was already felt like I had enough uphill battle being especially like before I got to high school, being the only Indian kid.
Oh, you were the only Indian kid.
Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't even ask about that. I just didn't, but I guess I just didn't ask.
Yeah.
I didn't know if there, yeah, I guess I, sometimes I'm really good at asking that stuff. And then sometimes I just totally gloss over it and I forget yeah. because my school was very multicultural. So I just don't even,
yeah.
I forget to ask.
Where was your school?
In Tucson, Arizona.
Uh-huh.
But yeah. Yeah. Well,
was
yeah.
it public school?
Mm-hmm. All public, all the way.
Yeah.
All the way. So I'm always fascinated, particularly by boarding school. It's just fascinating to me because I can't even, I feel like I would have just, I don't know what would have happened to me if I'd been boarding school. You know, do you think about that? If you had stayed at home and gone to public school,
things
what kind of kid you would
worse.
Be? Yeah.
It definitely would have been worse, especially, you know, like.
I mean, maybe I rebelled more because I was still living at home. So I could, because there's like a safety net there that
yeah.
you're taking advantage of, even as you exploit it.
Mm-hmm.
But like in my mind, because of all the shit I got involved in when I was in high school, thank God I still had like my dad there.
Right.
I think to my, so of course I'm going to the place of like, oh my God, I would have gotten pregnant or like died of a yeah. drug overdose or something.
Yeah.
But maybe I wouldn't have, maybe I would have evolved completely differently without that parental sort of, you know, mm-hmm. toe the, like the line that was kind of holding on to me.
Yeah. I think there's so many factors that would determine, you know, whether it's right for a kid or wrong for a kid, but it was definitely right for me.
And would you say that those are, I mean, not to put words in your mouth, but go ahead and feel free to say, and those friendships I built, man, those friendships.
It's true though. So the dorm that I lived in high school was just 30 boys and more so than like kids in my grade or anything like that. The people who I'm closest with was like a small group of like four or five boys from that dorm. Because we would spend all our time together, you know, yeah. we would eat together and yeah.
I love that.
Yeah.
Where do they all live now? You're like with me in her home. Yeah, my wife.
Exactly. They're waiting in the car right now. We're going to get pizza after this.
That's amazing.
I remember when one of my friends from that dorm moved. I had been trying to get him to move to LA for a long time. And then he did finally. And it just changed. Like I'd been living in LA for a while, for a few years. And then when that happened, it just like my, and I liked it. I liked it here, but it suddenly felt different. Just having him in the same city just felt like more, it made it feel like home in a
yeah.
way, like a part of my identity snapped into place.
Yeah.
Like a bit of the puzzle.
That makes total sense.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah.
Oh my God. You know what I just realized is I should probably get into this MASH game.
Oh yeah.
Before I keep you here till the end of time. Okay. So now I do have to tell you one quick thing, which is that there is a little hummingbird who has built a nest outside my closet window. And right now she is pulling little threads from the rope of that hanging plant.
Yeah.
To continue to build her nest. It's maybe the cutest thing that's happened in a decade in this neighborhood.
That's
so I just wanted you to be advised of that. I'm sure she'll come back by, but God, so cute. I'll show you the nest if you're interested. Although that would, all right. Okay. I'm thinking about dogs.
I didn't get to say thank you for having me on your podcast.
Oh my gosh.
So
are you kidding me?
So honored to be a boy of summer.
I was so excited.
And I feel, I feel really, flattered that you asked me, and also that I don't deserve to be here.
No, I feel so flattered that you said yes, and I was so excited that you were going to be on the cruise when I found out. I got like, I really was like, oh my God, that's really cool. That's so cool. I mean, this is a perfect place for us to become best friends.
When you asked me to do that, I was like, what does she? Why does she? And I was like, every podcast needs to have its least famous guest.
Oh, for God's sake! First of all, totally dead wrong about the level of knownness that you may or may not have on my podcast, but also like, who cares? I like to believe that my listeners are here for because they like the podcast, and
right.
and then you'll bring in people who like listening to you, but I'm not out there. I'm not going like, I need perfect strangers to be interested in me. Hold on. If I were doing that, I would hope to be making money too. It would be like, if I'm going to put that much devotion into like getting branded in some way, then
yeah.
I probably would have to take that more seriously. But I found a way to be very lazy about it and just do whatever I want.
That's a good way, because
I don't get paid.
Song Exploder, for Song Exploder, that's such a huge part of my consideration of like,
well, sure,
who's gonna be on.
Sure. So, and it's extremely practical. I mean,
but it's also
I'm
really
not
painful.
A terribly
that way
practical
too.
Person. Yeah. Do you have people who ask you to be on it and you kind of have to go, not yet, just let me get to where the podcast is there so that I can then introduce people to who I'm interested versus I need these people to come and rate it and subscribe and all that kind of stuff.
No. Yeah. And the way I try and tell them, you know, honestly, is like, I'm like, I would never put like my band on the podcast, you know?
I get it.
Yeah.
And also we've talked about this. We talked about this on the Joko Cruise, but the time and effort that you put into your podcast is very different from me. Like the time and effort that I put into this is us scheduling this, you coming over, me making sure I get pictures from you, getting a description, sending it to Nerdist, and then I'm done. It's not like I'm not editing. I'm not, you know, I'm not engineering. I'm not playing snippets of something else. It's just very, it's very lazy. What I'm saying is I have an improv-based podcast.
Surprising. The form follows the function or the other way around.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so first question, let's just go with, let's start building our little MASH universe for you. So let's get three places. I'm going to do real-world vacation homes, but then we'll explore some sort of more fantastical stuff in other categories. So three real-world places, if it were not a problem to get there, that you would like to have a vacation home.
Okay.
And so whatever vacation means to you, because that could mean a bustling city.
This is a real place, and I'm talking about a geographic geographic location.
I mean, I don't need latitude and longitude.
Right. Okay.
Maybe I should.
But some of these are okay, my first thought is not a place that I know, so I don't know that this is actually where I want to go, but I something in like the French countryside.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah, you want that, don't worry.
Yeah, where I can walk to a market and, you know, get some fresh groceries and then go home and make it. That's what I want.
Yeah, beautiful. I could put you right where I was an exchange student and you'd be happy as a clam. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's great.
Then where else? Probably New York.
Mm-hmm. Great.
I had a really hard time living in New York for a little while because it was so expensive and it was just so hard to live there. Really because of the money. Like I just felt like I could never really
experience I'm sure it. I could be very happy there if I had the money that I would want to have that life.
Yeah. So I'm assuming that in this scenario for MASH, I have the money.
Yeah. You're not a pauper.
Yeah.
In New York.
Then I've got like a fancy, you know.
Well, mansion, apartment, shack, house. You could end up with a shack.
Ooh.
But I guess it would be a sweet shack.
Yes.
In one of these places.
Yeah. If we're basing it on square footage.
And by the way, a shack in New York is still like a penthouse studio apartment.
But yeah. So
okay,
I'm
going to
say Manhattan.
Okay, great. Got it. New York. What's your final one?
My final one. Again, I haven't been there, so I don't really know.
Mm-hmm. But, I like this. I like that you're taking a little chance here.
Yeah. I'm going to say in... what's the neighborhood in Tokyo? Is it Shibuya?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Boy, busy, busy.
Yeah.
Shibuya, like Shibuya Crossing.
Yeah.
I did like that very much there. I think I thought all of Japan was going to be like that. Or just, I thought all of Tokyo was going to be like that.
Right.
I thought, how am I going to move and walk around?
Yeah.
It wasn't all
that. Is
that
like too busy? Should I pick the part, is it Nara, where they have the deer that run around and you can pet them?
I mean, that would probably be fine too.
That would be fine. I'm going to stick with Tokyo.
I think Tokyo in general, you could very easily find, there's some really cute, quiet neighborhoods. And then there's some really vibrant neighborhoods and then some just insane neighborhoods. But
yeah.
I guess I just put Tokyo. So that's good.
Okay.
Okay. Next one is three movies that you can jump into at the snap of a finger and you're in a safety bubble. So, but you're just experiencing the characters and the world.
Yes. This is one that I should think of this
one. I appreciate your willingness to be extemporaneous against all of your better judgment.
The first thing that popped in my head was Kicking and Screaming, the Noah Baumbach movie.
Oh, I love that movie.
Because my sister used to say that those guys reminded her of me and my friends from my dorm.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah. I'll have to watch it again with that in mind.
They're all a little obnoxious and we probably are too, or were anyway at that time. So I have I'm not totally sure. Maybe I'm going to be like, oh, these guys. But that was the first thing that came to mind.
Great.
The Jump Street reboots.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Okay, great.
I think that those guys are so sweet.
Great. That's a great choice. But you're really going realism.
Oh, I guess I didn't need to.
I mean, this is your opportunity I've live in Star Wars or whatever.
I've got school in my brain. And so I'm like, who would be my friends? Yeah, who do I want to have to be my friends?
I love it.
Yeah, because then like the next thing. Because I was like, and then like I would, you know, Emma Stone's character in Easy A. I was just thinking of like school movies.
You really were?
Yeah.
I love it though.
She's so nice in that.
Yeah, that's great.
or
I love this.
Lindsay Lohan's family in
The best Ladysmith Black Mambazo fans.
Yeah.
Mean Girls.
So not good. The actual Mean Girls.
But the family.
Yeah.
Agreed. I might have to put that down. Mean Girls.
Mean Girls, the just mean the family, just fam. The domestic life.
Mean Girls fam. Okay, great. Okay, next category is listen, let's just get the foods one right out of the way because your dad's a food scientist.
Okay.
Something different.
Something different.
three things that in this life are not good for you in some way that you can have in perpetuity with no physical ramifications in this other universe.
It's not a very original answer, but McDonald's French fries.
Great. Yeah, they really figured it out on that one.
Yeah. But I have like a crazy sweet tooth. So without... I don't have to pick a specific brand, right? I would say chocolate
chip. You're your father's son.
Yeah. Because I don't say chocolate chip cookies, but there are... Then
oh, just, a million different kinds. Yeah. You don't want to limit yourself to just
one. If I can have all of those and not have them be bad for me,
yeah,
that's really the jackpot.
Heck yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm just thinking of sweets. Mm-hmm. All I think about...
Please do. That's what this is for.
Did you ever hear, you know, it's like Adidas, all day I dream about sweets.
Do you like, so when you say you have a sweet tooth, does that mean that it does extend beyond pastries and chocolate to like fruity, sort of like Twizzlery kind of? Why would I ask that?
Yeah.
Why would anyone say other than like a weird association with something positive from their childhood? Like I'll eat them. I don't eat them. If I did, it would just be because I wanted to sort of feel like the kid who was eating Twizzlers.
Well, this is where I feel like there are divides where there's like, are you a chocolate based candy person and a non-chocolate based candy
person? People who like Sour Patch Kids, for example, aren't Swedish necessarily fish. Also upset. Yeah. You're not that guy.
I'm chocolate all the way.
Yeah. Okay. So what's your third one?
So my third one, I'll say ice cream.
Great. Great, great, great. All of these things, by the way, I would eat together without a second thought. Oh, French fries and ice cream, done.
Chocolate chip cookie sandwich with some French fries laid across the top.
Yeah, get that salt in there.
Yeah.
Please. Please. I don't know why I'm angry. Okay. next category.
Because it's not here.
Not here and it's not good for me. Next category. All due respect to your lovely wife. I mean, what a beautiful woman.
Thank you.
I can only say that because I don't know her. So I can't say, I mean, she seems wonderful, but I can tell you from afar, she's a real looker. How gross, Janet. But this is our alternate universe, sexy times, romance.
In theme with the teenage part of this show.
Yeah, great.
My teen self thanks you so much because this definitely wasn't, there was definitely a long time when it didn't seem like that was ever going to be.
Okay, good.
That would ever be anywhere.
Pleased.
And even still now, I'm like, how did that happen?
Yeah.
There's good. No way.
You don't take it for granted. That's great. So it can be a character from a movie. It doesn't have to specifically be, you know, the celebrity that you don't
from
know.
Movies,
but you
though,
do.
Right? Not
or
from,
books or from books. Okay. Hell, you can do cartoons if you want. I mean, some of my first crushes were like Muppets probably. So,
You know, I never really had like crushes on celebrities growing up. I don't know why that was. I remember my best friend growing up in like third or fourth grade being like, oh, I love Alyssa Milano. And I was like, but she's not somebody, you know.
Good for you. Good for you. It's very grounded.
Okay. But so now who would I pick? I was thinking about this on the way over.
And it can be someone from, you know, it can be like, oh, Diane Keaton, circa Annie Hall, like that kind of thing too.
Right.
And it also could be like, if you want to if you want to indulge a younger self, I'm not going to be grossed out if you're like, you know, Molly Ringwald and 16 Candles. Like, I'm not saying that you want a 15-year-old girl right now. We would all understand.
Yeah. Jonah Ray's answer, first answer for this was so good.
What was his first answer?
Ewan McGregor and the in Cars.
Oh.
I was like,
yeah,
damn.
Yeah. He really surprised me and delighted me with that. That was great.
Such a good answer.
Yeah.
I would definitely marry Ewan McGregor.
Okay, great.
And because, no, I can't repeat his answer.
All right.
I'm going to get on my own. But like that kind of, he's the best.
Yeah, he really is.
You tell me yours. I'm stalling for time.
You can stall for time. And I appreciate having the tables turned on me because I'm terrible at this. And my answers are so varied depending on who, what, where, when, and why.
I've got one.
Oh, yeah? Look, that was a great time killer because I didn't have to come up with anything.
How about Catherine Deneuve in Umbrellas of Cherbourg?
Oh, wonderful.
But with an asterisk where... Well, I don't want to spoil the movie for people, but where it turns out differently in the end.
Okay, great. That's fair. You get the version that you want.
Can I say a real person who I don't know.
Yeah.
So she, to me, is just a fictional character.
Of course.
As far as I can tell, in my interaction with her.
Yeah.
But, Jessica Williams.
Oh, sure.
As the correspondent on The Daily Show,
character. Yeah. It's only a wonderful compliment. There's nothing weird about that.
Yeah.
And I agree 100%. That's great.
One time I tweeted that I thought that she would be, that she should play Lizzie Bennet in a Jane Austen remake.
Amazing.
And it was very exciting because she wrote back. But that character, if I'm going to design, that would be who it would be. Jessica Williams as Lizzie Bennet.
Oh, I love it. Boy, you really engineered that.
Mm-hmm.
I love that. Okay.
And then
it's true for me that you have someone?
No, go ahead.
Oh no, I just like, we've been talking about high school years so much that yeah, it's the easiest pull for me is to like go back to a time when I had a like very intense crush that lasted a long time. Cause nowadays it's not that I don't have them, but if I'm watching, I have such a short attention span now that like, if I am watching that thing in the moment, I'll be like, how delicious is that person? But then I just kind of forget about it afterwards. Yeah. Whereas, you know, in high school I was like, if I don't marry Jodie Foster, I may die. But I also need to be married to Steve Martin. Like, I just was so, it was so important to me. So like and for the longest time, I just held the biggest torch for Kevin Kline in Pirates of Penzance. So he's kind of always still floating around in there. That version of him with his pirate outfit that's like, yep, cut open with his hairy chest showing. I mean, it's absurd. With like a bandana around his head. What is that? And then all the Jodie Foster stuff was like mostly young Jodie Foster. So then I just felt as creepy as like someone who shot the president for mm-hmm. her. So there's no like through line. There's no real, you can't go like, oh, if that, then of course that. It's just like all right over the place.
Once you get into the number three slot, the pressure is a little bit off. And now I'm like, yeah, just like flooded with,
fuck it, I don't even answers. Like this person. I'm Anna like, Nicole Smith. What? Okay.
How about in, now I feel like this is, how about Veronica Mars? Is that too
yeah.
weird since I already just
no,
talked about Kirsten Bell?
No, that's wonderful.
Yeah.
I think that's fantastic.
I'll give you my alternates. Just
yeah.
Other alternate would have been. Have you seen Borgen?
Oh yes,
Birgitte Nyborg.
The only person who I know besides you who's seen it also picked her in his is Paul F. Tompkins. Unsurprising.
Wow.
Yeah, you're in good company.
All right,
you're in good company. That's a great choice.
Birgitte Nyborg. Oh, just yeah. I have so
wonderful.
So many tender feelings.
Me too.
For her.
Oh, she's wonderful. Yeah. No, great. Boy, that's a good alternate. I don't know what. Yeah, well. Okay. Next category is alternate. Let's do alternate universe career.
Wait, so, who was the first person that I picked?
Catherine Deneuve.
Well, let's put in Brigitte Nyborg because the other otherwise it's just too many young ladies.
Okay. Got it. Okay, perfect. All right. And so this is alternate universe careers. And again, this is the sort of perfection MASH universe where you don't have to think about the day in, day out slog of something you might like. You might go, oh, well, if I would want to do that, but then that would mean I would also have to blank. This is sort of the idealized version of these careers. That's sort of only the good stuff.
Okay. Okay. Like you're already famous and you only do the best things.
Exactly.
Okay. I think I would then be an architect.
Great.
As my sister had always intended for me to be.
Yeah.
She was like, you should be an architect. And then I looked into it and I was like,
I looked into it. I think I felt that way about astronomy for 1 second. I was like, sure, this is, I'm sorry, there's how much math? Okay, I'm good. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Goodbye.
Okay. And so again, the idea is that I would only have to do the good stuff and I would be good at it. I would love to be like a film auteur.
Oh yeah.
Right. You know, write and direct.
Yeah.
Two things I can't do at all, but that would be great.
Great.
Universally beloved for being a genius.
Yeah.
That sounds like a good.
Yeah. Like I just wished I lived inside of one of Rishi's movies. That would be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
You're that guy.
I'm just responsible for the kind of joy. A person who's responsible for the kind of joy that I experience.
Yes. Understood. 100%.
And then while we're at it, a pastry chef.
Great. Also bringing a great deal of joy into people's lives. Yeah, absolutely. Okay, cool. All right. This one is, there's something sort of like weirdly ephemeral and random about it, but this sort of the experience it again for the first time idea, which can be as simple as seeing a movie that and being able to cherish that same excitement. Like, I think Pulp Fiction is a good example. Like, when I saw that, I definitely was like, oh my God, what's happening? This is amazing. What has happened here? If I saw it again for the first time tomorrow, I doubt I would have that experience right. with it. So I would want the whole feeling of it. I would want that whole feeling and like the high afterwards. Mm-hmm. So three things like that, but it can also be like, you know, the first time you visited X place or whatever.
Mm-hmm. This is so cheesy, but really, like I always want to go back to the day that I fell in love with my wife.
I couldn't relate to that or respect it more.
I actually have a photo from that day and it's like one of my most cherished things.
I love that. Who's going to, that's the kind of cheesiness I insist upon.
Okay. I'm so grateful for that photo. Like I didn't know it at the time that was what it was. Like I knew I was like flooded with some kind of emotion and I was just like, I was just really happy and I took a picture of her at that moment and now I'm so glad that I did because I was like, oh yeah, there it is.
Yeah.
You can see the exact, it's the opposite of the thing in The Simpsons when you can see Ralphie's heart break.
That's right.
It's
Oh, that's slow-mo. Oh yeah, exactly. Okay. Well, that's wonderful. I don't know. That's your first one. So good luck with your number two and three.
And then I think there was a moment when I remember, being, you know, just like with no preparation, I got an email, that Pontiac wanted to use a song of mine in a car commercial. And I was not signed to a record label or anything. It was just, I'd been doing my like DIY thing for 6-7 years at that point, you know, and it felt like this incredible validation that came attached to like a check.
Yeah.
That was just, and it just was out of the blue.
Yeah. Oh God. That's fantastic.
Where I was just like, it was the closest thing to feeling like I'd won
the lottery. Absolutely. Yeah. But also like you won the lottery for something you took love and care in doing. So it's even better than that because it feels like a random win from the universe, but it also is directly attached to like your work and your heart and soul. I think that's amazing. Okay. Yeah. sadly, that has been translated to Pontiac on here, which strips it of all art. Okay, and then number three.
And then number three. Number three is when I was growing up, my parents would listen to this Indian music program on the radio, and they would sometimes like make tapes of it. Mm-hmm. And it was like, it wasn't contemporary music. It was like older music. I think the very first time I heard, and this, there was this tape of like old 60s Bollywood songs. And I didn't understand what nostalgia was, but it was like my first experience with it. But it was for a nostalgia for something that I had not actually lived through. But just the sound of that music gave me like this palpable feeling. That sense of both like the feeling itself and also the wonder of not understanding what it was that was happening. I would love to be able to relive that.
I love that. Because I think that I unconsciously search for that feeling all the time. With a lot of the music I listen to.
I think that became
that happy sad for me feeling of like longing, not necessarily for the past, but there's a sense of something lost and there's a sense of the unknown, but there's a sense of maybe treasure and like hope. It. Yeah, it's just all of that stuff wrapped up.
That feeling became, I think, like the primary motivator for all the music that I ever made.
That makes sense to me because you're very talented. And if that's where my head and heart are when I'm enjoying music, it makes sense that I would be drawn to stuff like that too. Great. Okay. I'm just leaning all the way away from anything musical. Do you want me to just lean right out of it? Cause sure. It just feels like it's too connected.
Yeah.
I don't want you to feel like you have to have a perfect answer. So to that end, superhero skills. I'm just going to the other side of the world mm-hmm. on totally unreasonable, unrealistic, crazy, cuckoo. Three skills, three superhero gifts, three powers. That is the word I'm looking for. Three powers. Yeah. Wow, that was some impressive aphasia on my part. Three, what do you call them? Hobbies. No, that's not what I mean. Slight abilities. Wait.
The one that I always think about, because it's how it's both a blessing and a curse, is telepathy.
Yeah.
And somehow I'm drawn to both parts of it. Like I'm attracted to that idea of the curse of it,
mm-hmm.
being burdened with it.
Mm-hmm. maybe you just know, maybe there's some part of you that feels like if you had the gift part of it, your responsibility would be also to sort of have the yin and the yang of whatever that entails.
Yeah. And then to whatever extent, you know, superpowers are the manifestation of our inner selves, I would like to have the power of invulnerability.
Wonderful. Wonderful.
If I can't have a thick skin in this life.
Agreed. Agreed.
And there's, I don't know what this power would be, but it would be like the equivalent of like the cornucopia, like to be able to like generate food and like resources in a way that would end want or something.
Jesus Christ. I'm just totally kidding. Totally kidding. Yeah. Bread and fishes. Fish man.
Yeah.
I'm just put Jesus.
Yeah.
But you know, no, I think that's great.
With some vegetarian options.
I said bread. okay. What do we want to call that?
Horn of Plenty.
Everything I'm coming up with is so gross. I almost just said the provider. The provider.
That's pretty good.
It's so like legit. 1950s nuclear family. Yeah. Like you're not going to eat unless the provider gives you something. Horn of Plenty is much more, there's much more whimsy. I mean, there's an O and an apostrophe. Right, so that's unbeatable. Okay. Amazing. And then, so we're down to our final category. Final category, you can live for a day in someone else's body. And so it can be just like, I would want to see what it would feel like to be, you know, my cousin, or I would want to see what it felt like to be Barack Obama for a day, or what would it be like to be a woman and have a totally different set of tools.
Mm-hmm. And so not, so I could do either specific or non-specific. Mm-hmm.
Or an animal, could even be an animal. Assuming you have, you retain your level, some level of consciousness afterwards that you can remember, even if you're sort of stripped of that consciousness in the moment, to be able to reconnect with that experience.
Yeah. No, I would definitely want to be a woman for a day.
Great.
Did you ever see that Dustin Hoffman video when he, where he's talking about Tootsie and like his experience of making Tootsie, and he just like starts bawling?
I have not seen it. What I did see was him do like a 45-minute intro for the film Tootsie at the Arclight back when they were doing like their 100 greatest films or whatever.
Yeah.
And he talked a little bit about that, but he was sort of all over the place. But yeah. I'll have to watch it because that's one of my all-time favorite movies. I think I would go into Tootsie if I could.
Yeah.
And just hang out with those right. freaks.
Yeah.
It'd be so fun.
I think it's it's a level of empathy that I just can't get to, no matter how hard I try. I'll never be able to like really have it. And so just to be able to have it for a day, I feel like it would make me a better person.
Absolutely. Final two.
Okay. Wait.
You have two more.
What did I say so far?
Just to be a woman for a day. You're like, did I not say I wanted to be Dustin Hoffman for a day? Maybe right. I wasn't clear.
Okay. I feel like now I should have picked specific women, but no, and I think just one.
No, I think that's fine.
Then I would like to,
because also this could be your trip into the past if you wanted to.
Okay,
you could
great.
Be like, I
yes.
would want to be a cobbler in 1870s.
I would like to have been, Michael Jordan for a day.
Great.
Not even that Michael Jordan is my favorite basketball player, but because he just at a time in my life, like represented the, just the height.
Oh,
of
sure. Understood.
Winningness.
Understood. Yeah. He was as close to a superhero as we've had as yeah. humans in some, on some level.
Yeah. And who else? Real person though.
No.
No.
Fuck it. No.
I'll pick Birgitte Nyborg again.
Great. Great. It's going to be fascinating if you get to spend a day as her, but you also end up with her, because then it really will just be like a quick little Freaky Friday.
I mean, that would be the ultimate in both empathy and narcissism.
And that's what we're striving for here
exactly.
with this match game.
That's the...
Okay, so you know this Yahtzee. Little last part where I just do a quick thing
yep.
Where you told me to stop and then yep. I do the... Okay,
yep.
So just I'm starting now. Tell me when
okay.
to stop.
Stop.
Okay, I'm going to pause this, do some calculating.
Okay.
It does not involve actual math. I'm going to give you your 100% guaranteed MASH future.
Excellent.
I mean, I really was like... I feel like the last expression was very like Robert De Niro. Like, you got good stuff. Good stuff here.
Pretty good Robert De Niro.
In as much as a blonde-haired, blue-eyed, younger woman for now. Yeah, thank you.
But you got the
I
shape of his
that.
Mouth really right on. Yeah.
I really, okay. what a gifted woman. Okay, these are all great. Number one, I want to congratulate you on your ability. I'm just going to jump straight into this one. You can jump into the 21 Jump Street reboots.
Okay.
And hang out with those guys.
All right.
Super fun. That seems like the right environment in which you have unlimited access to McDonald's French fries.
Yes.
Just fucking around with those guys,
okay.
eating French fries.
So far, it sounds a lot like my life was. Basically just reliving my teenage years.
So that's just like some palling around fun times. Mm-hmm. They probably come hang out with you from time to time at your house in New York.
Okay.
You had a house in Manhattan, dude.
Wow.
That's a big deal.
So I'm a millionaire.
That's
a
you are very easily a multimillionaire. I want to congratulate. Well, you know why? Because you're one of the world's preeminent architects, and that, my friend, pays very well indeed.
That was definitely the worst answer. Remember,
well,
I looked into
too
it.
Too bad.
I looked into it.
Well, too bad because you're a MF and architect.
All right.
However, when you just need to get away from that and you're like, listen, I want to feel the total opposite right now, just in the sense of being in your body and having so much of what you're doing professionally be about that, you get to jump into Michael Jordan's body.
Okay.
For one day.
All right.
I'm going to let you carve that day up into different hours and different minutes. So you really could do that for the rest of your life if you want. You could be like, I just want 5 minutes as Michael Jordan circa 90.
Yeah.
What was left? Okay. So you also have the ability to just create delicious and sustaining food for the world.
Well, that's pretty awesome.
You could like design one more thing as an architect and then give it up and just do that. I don't think anyone would complain. Exactly.
I'll just design a place to put all the food.
Yeah. Yeah. There you go. Just a big fridge. okay. Now these two are they conflict with each other a little bit. But this is a world in which everything can exist, peacefully. Mm-hmm. You, have ended up with, Bridget Nyborg.
Wow.
So well played and well done.
Yes, thank
because
you.
That's a great companion. She's got a lot of sex appeal. She's incredibly smart. She's very sensitive. She's got a practicality,
she has a
real hope and optimism in the future. Mm-hmm. She's very collaborative. I think that's great. I think that she is going to be very accepting of the fact that whenever you want, you can also revisit the moment that you realize you fell in love with your wife.
I think she would be okay with that.
I think she'd be fine with it.
Yeah.
She's very grounded.
Yeah.
She's a very grounded person. Rishi, thank you so much for doing the podcast.
Thank
you. This was what a joy and a pleasure.
There is
a final piece of this that I think you might know is coming, but if you don't, I'm really sorry, which is that I just need you to sing a little snippet of Don Henley's Boys of Summer.
I don't even remember. Okay. I think I need a little.
Mm-hmm. You want me to sing you in?
Yeah.
Well, where would you do want? Do you have a verse in mind, or do you want to do the chorus? Like,
I think it's gonna have to be the chorus because I don't. Know the chorus well.
Okay. This is a. But I know you're not home. I can see you. Your brown skin shining in the sun.
I think we need. I think I might need karaoke lyrics.
Okay. You can also make it up. Oh, you know what? I might have printed them out one time when I was feeling really. Look at this. And it's also had water spilled on it. I mean, that really makes it look like an ancient document.
Okay. Oh, this is about me. You can see me brown skin shining in the sun, you know? Yeah.
Do you wear Wayfarers by any chance?
I do. I mean, kind of. They're not aviators, but they're the other.
Yeah.
They're kind of like aviators. Yeah. Okay. All right. Are you going to sing it with me?
I will if you want me to.
Yes, I would prefer that.
Okay. Wherever you pick, I'll try to join you.
Okay. Yeah, I'm definitely going to need your help.
Okay, great.
Okay. I can see you.
Your brown skin shining in the sun. You got your hair thrown back. I don't know which one you're doing, but they're all a little different.
Yeah, we'll
and your sunglasses on, baby. I can tell you my love for you will still be strong after the boys of summer have gone. Oh, Rishi, you're the best. Guys, I'll talk to you next time on the podcast. Now, we talked about West Wing Weekly. We talked about Song Exploder. People can find you on the internet.
Mm-hmm.
Where can they find you?
I'm on Twitter at Rishi Hirway, and Rishi is spelled H-R-I-S-H-I.
Do not forget that H at the beginning. Yep. You'll live to regret it.
Twitter and Instagram and whatever. That's where people can find me.
Wonderful. Guys, I hope you're enjoying your summer. I'll talk to you soon. As always, the JV Club theme song is Back Before We Were Brittle by the amazing Say Hi. Now leaving Nerdist.com.